The interesting part, Ethan, is that in the industry you hear, oh, you know, zoning is the toughest part. The city is getting them to change their minds. It was literally like God just opened the doors. Like it was so easy. It was scary. So I literally like just shot a cold email to the head of zoning. And he was like, yeah, here's my citizens information. We'll schedule a meeting.
Welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and today I'm excited to welcome Kim Delaney, co-founder and chief visionary officer of Hazy Enterprises and the executive director of Tiny House Big Movement. Over the past 5 years, Kim has made strides in transforming the traditional housing model by utilizing her business savvy and passion for sustainability to champion tiny home communities. From changing municipal ordinances to negotiating real estate development deals, she's on the forefront of creating affordable, equitable housing solutions. We're going to dive into her journey, exploring how a crisis during the pandemic turned into an innovative approach to housing and her ambitious plans for the future, including her work with sustainable materials like hemp and bamboo and the upcoming Carolina Tiny House Festival, which is April 12th through 14th, that Kim is organizing. So stay tuned as we discuss all things tiny living and the impact it can have on our communities with the insightful Kim Delaney. All right, I am here with Kim Delaney. Kim is a Tennessee native and graduate of East Tennessee State University. She's the co-founder and chief visionary officer of Hazy Enterprises, as well as the executive director of Tiny House Big Movement. She's been in business for 5 years, previously focusing on the hemp and CBD market, now turning to the plant in a different light as a building commodity. Her mission is to enhance people's lives while building community, while creating a path for equality and equity within the housing market by developing pocket communities of tiny homes. By collaborating with local leaders and green companies, the vision is to develop an eco-friendly and sustainable lifestyle. Kim Delaney, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ethan. I'm so glad to be here.
Great. Glad to have you. So what is Tiny House Big Movement and what inspired you to start it?
Absolutely. So I'll do the other part first. So what inspired me was tiny homes in general, right? Super cute, super creative. Mm-hmm. I just like how it kind of challenges the status quo. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the traditional, you know, big house, white picket fence kind of thing.
Yep.
That's what initially caught my eye. And then as time progressed, trying to get into a home myself, now that I'm in North Carolina. And I think we tried, 6 or 7 years ago, could never qualify, credit score, whatever the case may be. And then we finally qualified for a home. It was a little pricey. I was uncomfortable with it. Mm-hmm. At the literally the week of closing, we were denied because of my husband at the time, because of his student loans.
Mm.
So that was kind of like a bummer, but kind of a blessing in disguise. So then after the divorce, I started looking again. This time I was approved, had a little money, but the market had changed because now we were in COVID. And Charlotte is a very tough market. I think the Carolinas and Texas, like Houston, were some of the only places that did not go backwards.
Yeah.
Concord specifically too is where my business is. Our markets are just really competitive. And pricing keeps going up. So when I was looking, the houses were kind of not to our standards, not that it was something I wanted to get into. And so, but it was also having that tiny home concept in the back of my head, right? So finally I was like, you know what? This is not what I want. I know what I want. I know I want a tiny home. I know I want land. So every home we're looking at is not going to be that.
Right.
And then, so that was part of it. And then the other part was, at the end of the day, Ethan, like I had checked all the boxes, you know, went to college, yeah, was married, had kids, and I was making 80 grand and could not get into a home. And that discouraged me. And so I'm thinking,
yeah,
if I did all the things, what about the people who haven't?
Mm-hmm.
So if my struggle is here, theirs is going to be even harder. So that's how the for-profit was created. That's how Hazy was created. And then from that birth, the nonprofit, that's how Tiny House Big Movement came into play.
Nice. Okay. So I loved hearing that story, and I agree with answering that part of the question first. So let's do the first part of the question, which is,
okay,
you know, what is Tiny House Big Movement?
Okay. So Tiny House Big Movement is the ability to change municipalities' minds, to come in, have conversations with city officials and zoning, to really look at how we can tackle affordable housing in a creative way. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So using their words, right? So some of them don't like the word tiny home. So I mean, cottages, I'll call it whatever you want to. So really trying to address the housing need.
Yeah.
And so looking at it from the city official side, and then working with builders to create tiny home communities. So we, at this point, I'm a land developer trying to create communities here in our area, whether that's infill lots, small parcels, just whatever way we can get in.
And how do you envision the impact of these tiny home communities on the local housing market, or the local housing markets where you hope to create them?
I think the impact is going to be huge. I've done a couple of different like vending opportunities, mm-hmm, and the, I guess, outpouring of interest, whether people already own land, yeah, or, you know, of course, everybody says to me, I've seen the shows. I love the shows. So I think that the need is there. The desire is there. I think as horrible as the pandemic was, I think it definitely showed us what is valuable, what's necessary. Mm. So I think people are a lot more open to it now as well. So I think it's great timing. So I think the outcome is really to get everybody in homes. You know how we talked about the demographic earlier, right? Everybody needs housing. So we're looking at, yeah, our elderly population. We're looking at, you know, new college grads. We're looking at, you know, small families. We're looking at people that just need homes. And so we're hoping, well, we know that the impact is going to be outrageous. So now that we've passed the ordinance here, I'm sorry, I probably jumped ahead.
Okay.
We have so many cities around us that are kind of looking for us to start to build with them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, what, you mentioned an ordinance that got changed. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I'm based in Concord, which is like a suburb of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
And Concord was named like best small towns or something by HGTV like last year. So that just made it the catapult even bigger. Great schools, great economic development, industries are moving here. And so workforce development is really big, as well as workforce housing. And so being able to go to the city and say, hey, this is an idea and an opportunity that we're looking to do with to bring tiny homes in. The interesting part, Ethan, is that so many, you know, in the industry you hear, oh, you know, zoning is the toughest part. The city is getting them to change their minds. It was literally like God just opened the doors. Like it was so easy. It was scary.
Wow.
So I literally like just shot a cold email to the head of zoning, and he was like, yeah. Like, here's my citizens information. We'll schedule a meeting. And I was blown away.
Wow.
And so had a fantastic meeting with them. They asked me to submit my research. I sent them a huge document of everything I had compiled. And they used that to basically draft the ordinance and asked me for feedback. It was phenomenal.
Amazing. So what is the ordinance?
Go ahead.
Or sorry, how long did it take?
It took about a year and a half-ish. So it just passed this past October.
Wow. Yeah. So anybody who knows about changing laws knows that that's actually really fast.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So what does the ordinance say or do? Or like, what does it change about the laws in the town?
So the good and the tough part is it's conditional, mm-hmm, right?
Okay.
So currently it's foundation only. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to challenge that a little bit and saying, you know, tiny house on wheels, these people are not transient. Like these, you know, it's not the same demographic as like a trailer park, or, you know, it's a different mentality. So currently it's on foundation. I believe it's 600 square feet. What made it change? Because they still consider a single family dwelling, right? Mm. So now we're able to kind of force what density looks like. Because Concord has outpaced its growth, we have a sewer allocation issue.
Okay.
So now I can say, okay, well, we don't necessarily need all those gallons. Let's kind of rethink that. And then because we're kind of tackling, I want to say housing that's affordable, right?
Yeah.
Because we're kind of tackling it from that side, that gives us a leg up into getting on the sewer allocation timeline. Because right now, any builder that comes in is looking like at a 5-year wait list. So it gave us some ways to kind of work around that housing piece altogether.
Wow. Fantastic. So how far along are you in the actual, you know, real estate development side of this project?
We are as far as we need to be, except for capital. So we have all the other things. We have a fantastic board. Actually, the mayor of Concord is one of my mentors. Mm-hmm. So he's been very instrumental in making sure this happens.
Nice.
So we have a solid board of directors that we've created. Lots of interest with, you know, the city itself. I've had a few investors. I think I'm probably up to about 4 or 5 now who are interested in the project. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a matter of trying to figure out if or how much equity I want to give up. And that's kind of what's been holding me back. But at this point, we're kind of looking at land, what opportunities are here in the area. And from that point, honestly, as soon as we get our pilot project out, I think that's when the funding will definitely pour in.
Fantastic. And what is the pilot project like? How can you say more about the design of it?
Yeah. So we are working with a builder who is based in Charlotte, and they are steel frame builders. So one of our big things is to make sure these are like clean builds, as clean as possible, to minimize toxins. So that was very integral in who we decided to work with.
Okay.
So we are currently kind of going back and forth and tweaking floor plans, but we're looking at a studio up to a 3-bedroom currently.
Nice.
So we're really excited about that. So we've saw everything except for the 3-bedroom. So they're creating that now. And another thing I thought was interesting is they kind of, how do I want to say it? Container homes, they're not a fan of, because, you know, you can't, with the bill of lading, you don't know how clean it is and what chemicals were in there. So they actually proposed at our last meeting that they could basically create a container home cheaper than what you can buy one for, which I thought was, that was mind blowing to me. But that's kind of where we are. So really working with our builder, Jill Pearson, who's, of course, Miss Tiny Home, right? Miss Black Tiny Home in my eyes. She is on the board, and we've had conversations with maybe allowing her to give some creative feedback in how the design is of the homes, because they are very masculine right now. They're very transparent with us. Like, they don't have a female on the board who can kind of make those touches.
Mm.
But I think the team is very open, and I think that's very helpful as well.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm also a huge fan of Jules. Actually has been on the show twice.
Got it.
Yeah. So speaking of which, you have an event planned. And I definitely want to help get the word out about it. So, you know, tell us about the event, you know, where it is, what it is, and
Okay. So a little bit of background. Ethan, I'm always about the backstory, so sorry.
I love it. Lay it on me.
So my background is in event planning. When I was in Tennessee, I worked for East Tennessee State University when I graduated, and I was in multicultural affairs doing student programming for the campus. Really loved that. And so when I moved to Charlotte, I started an event company, and we lasted a couple of years, got acquired. So now that I'm back working for myself, I noticed that, you know, anytime I'm traveling to a tiny home festival, it's, you know, hours from here. It's in like a small country town. And so really looking at, one, how can we fundraise, right, for a tiny house big movement?
Yep.
But two, everything we're trying to do is educate, right? If we're trying to change minds, especially with the city officials, we have to show them that these are not necessarily she sheds. Like, these are livable, like more than one person can stay there. So I was like, you know what? I've done conventions. I've done festivals. As scary and as hard as it is, I'm going to do that. And so because I'm very vested in my community, I had made really great connections. So we were able to get the Charlotte Motor Speedway plugged in. They're actually providing this space in kind, which is huge. But I think that gives us a couple of things, right?
Nice.
Validity in our organization. And then that just great visibility. It's right there at the Speedway. We're close to the interstate.
Yeah.
It's a major arena, right? Like, I'm not going to a small country town. Like, it's a major entity. And so we will be there April the 12th through the 14th. So on the 12th is like the pre-event.
Okay.
The 12th is kind of invite only. So we're getting Dan, I always say his name wrong, Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
to come in from Tiny House Industry Association. So Dan will come in and speak on, he'll kind of speak their language. So we're inviting municipalities, city officials to come in, and he'll talk to them about zoning and, you know, how to permit and things like that, and really discuss also the benefits of Tiny House on Wheels. So that will be the Friday, the 12th.
Okay.
That evening we'll do like a, you know, a networking meet and greet. And then the show will be that weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So
nice.
For dwellers to come in, builders, of course, vendors of all sizes. Food vendors are a little tricky because of the contract with the Speedway. But otherwise, everybody is welcome. We are definitely looking for sustainability vendors. So, you know, split ACs or wind power or solar, like any of those people we would love to have as well. So, yeah. So we plan to make this like our annual big fundraiser, you know, as opposed to doing like a gala or business breakfast, like making something that involves the whole community and really putting eyeballs on what we're doing.
Nice. Nice. And so then as a fundraiser, the festival will help to support the development of the communities?
Correct. Yes.
Nice. Well, that's really exciting. I'm always a fan of hearing about new tiny house events, you know, organized by new faces to the movement. It's great.
Yes, yes. Thank you. I'm excited. It's a lot of work. Every time I put on a show, I think I must be crazy. I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack. And it all comes together, but it is the hardest work you will ever do.
Yeah. I mean, I planned my own wedding for the most part. And it was, I had major respect for anybody who does professional event planning because
exactly.
It is not easy.
Exactly.
Not easy at all.
Yes.
Yeah. So in your bio, you mentioned, I think there was something about focusing on hemp as a building commodity. And I was curious if you could tell us more about that. I love hearing about new building materials. I know I've actually been wanting to have somebody on the show to talk about hempcrete. Tell me about where this fits in for you.
Absolutely. So, you know, like you said at the beginning, I come from the CBD and hemp space, right? So There's a lot of farmers here in the area that I've made some great relationships with.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, because legalization is such a tough push, especially in the South.
Yeah.
5 years in, I'm burnt out. And so I wanted to kind of keep those connections, but come out of the retail side of that.
Mm-hmm.
I do not have a green thumb. So there is no point in me trying to be a farmer, like not my jam.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I looked at our, you know, just other festivals again, as I did because I did the Carolinas Cannabis Convention, that was my trade show as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But looking at kind of the waste of the plant, you know, once they create whatever product, how can we reuse that, especially in, you know, your non-legal states where it's more industrialized hemp? And then too, because I am immune compromised. So everything I do, the way I live, what I clean with, how I eat, really focuses on how much cleaner can it be? And so when I start to look at, I did a class with Parsons School of Design and their healthy building materials.
Okay.
And when I really understood how that impacted our health, it blew my mind. And so again, as I started putting the pieces together for our organization, it was, hey, how can we really impact lives and change outcomes, right? How can we change health outcomes? Because I would never want somebody to go through what I have been through if we can make that change. And so that's when I started looking at hempcrete and seeing how viable it was, especially in this region, right? There was a lot of push like in Europe, but what was here? So that has been a big focus. And then looking at bamboo as well. So sustainable products that we can incorporate and build. So even though we have this steel builder right now, that's just the quickest way to get to market. But our end goal is to actually build internally so that we can utilize more of those sustainable products.
Nice. And then I meant to ask this before. People who listen to this show know that I like jump back and forth from topics. Hopefully they're okay with it. So with the communities, do you have a particular model in mind for the homes? Like, are they going to be just sold as single family homes? Will they be rented to people? Will they be condos? Like how will that work?
So we're kind of looking at a mix, right? So like the kids and I went to Acne Bell like mid-pandemic. And because I had a fascination with tinies, right? I wanted to see if we could maneuver as a family.
Yep.
That's when they fell in love with it. So that's when I got my complete buy-in. So we're looking at having homeownership, which is huge, especially in communities of color. Our housing homeownership percentages have not changed since like the 50s. And I actually heard this morning on the radio coming in that in Charlotte, only I think it said 40% of the Black population is homeowners. And Charlotte is a huge, diverse population. So there's still a lot to do there. And so we're looking at, you know, homeownership, of course, because that's just huge. And then we're looking at, you know, leasing options because rent is insane. And then also like some short-term rentals. So people can kind of try it out. You know, is this the thing for me?
Yeah.
So really, I like to call it like a mixed use, so to speak, mixed generational community. That's the goal.
Nice. Nice. And do you have, you know, targets in mind for how to make the homes affordable?
Yes. So the builder, so what's interesting to me, my background is in procurement. So before, when I was still working, I worked for Adam and Eve as a buyer, as a corporate buyer. And so that's my language, like wholesale and that kind of thing. And so I noticed when I came into this industry, nobody really spoke that language, right? They're used to doing retail and one-offs, direct to consumer. And so when I started having these conversations with like, I can't think of a builder off the top of my head, but Wendy, is it Wendy River in Chattanooga? We had talked.
Wind River. Yeah.
Yeah. We had talked a couple of years ago. I think now they're probably a lot more advanced, but I was like, you know, how can I don't necessarily want to be a distributor, but can I purchase a home wholesale and then, you know, to resell it? And so I talked to a couple of builders about that and they were just like, wait, what? Like, we don't know. We don't, you know, we're not set up for that. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. So with our builder now, the price point is reasonable enough to where we can make the homes affordable enough. So in Concord and Charlotte, it just came out last week, our median cost of a home is like $330,000. Now in LA, that might sound phenomenal, but here on the East Coast, it's like, ouch. So
yeah,
definitely we'll cut that at least in half. So that's why I try not to use the word affordable housing, but housing that's affordable, right?
Nice. Okay. Okay. Well, something that I love about the tiny house movement is that there is still this DIY spirit, and so many people that I've talked to who go on to create tiny home communities or start festivals or do these kinds of things are people who just looked around and said, hey, I want, you know, I wanted this for myself, or I think that my, where I live needs this. And then they go and do it.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. And so I was curious, you know, if you could give yourself advice, you know, if you could kind of travel back in time and kind of give yourself advice at the beginning of this process, you know, what are some things that you've learned? Or just another way of asking is, what's some advice to one of our listeners who is like, you know what, I should do that where I live too.
Right. That's such a good question. goodness grief. Advice would be to be super involved. I have always been that kid. I've always been one who like just wants to jump in and help and learn. Even in college, I remember saying to my professor, I want to do all the internships. Like I want to be a sponge. Yeah. I literally said to her, I want to be a sponge and soak it all up. Like put me wherever. So I think it's especially as an introvert, which I used to be, which is crazy. It's really throwing yourself out there. It's going to the very first thing I did, even with CBD, the first phone call I made was to the Chamber of Commerce. I said, hey, can we have a conversation? Number one is cannabis. Number two, we're in the South. Number three, I'm Black. Like, can I do this and be okay?
Yeah.
And I've cultivated those relationships. And so now my name literally has came up in rooms that I'm not in. And something is boiling there, right? So it's really being creative. I'm a big advocate of the Chamber of Commerce. I've met so many connections there. I attend a co-working space as well. That's a ton of entrepreneurs. So I'm really like, you know, I'm visible. I'm purposeful, especially as a woman of color. I'm trying to, you know, really stand out and be visible in my community. So I think it's really standing behind what you want. Talking to city officials, going to some of those meetings because they're open to the public, and just showing your face. Advice, goodness grief. Advice for myself, though, would be do it anyway. It's scary as shit. Literally every day I'm like, should I do this? Why am I doing this? Oh my God. So even when I called you this morning, got to that grant writing workshop, met so many people in the nonprofit space, met like three ladies who were in some aspect of housing, whether it was homelessness or women needing shelter. I got so filled from being there this morning. And I'm literally in the car just like, thank you, God. Like, thank you, God, for Ethan being able to move us. Thank you, God, for like this opportunity. Like it, again, everything has just been, I'm a God girl, so that's just what it is. But everything has just been so laid out. It's scary, but fascinating.
Yeah.
So just jump in, like just do it because somebody has to do it. That's the thing. Somebody has to do it.
Nice. Nice. That's really well said. And I love that advice. Just, you know, just jump in and do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that I like to ask all my guests is, you know, are there one or two or three resources, things that have helped you specifically like learn or do this? It could be books or people or websites or really anything, kind of open-ended questions, just that have things that have helped you out along the way that you'd like to recommend.
Okay. I am a huge nerd, so I research everything. Usually takes me down the rabbit hole. But initially I started with somewhere between Tia and Microlife.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at, and I think Microlife was still kind of building out their education website.
Yeah.
Because I remember signing up for their zoning piece and it hadn't surfaced yet. So really kind of understanding the back end of it, see how we can make this work. And on the East Coast, when I started, there really were not any communities. I think Acony Bell and of course, Microlife, that I knew of, that was kind of it. Right. And then I found, as I started researching, there were smaller ones around us. Like Wilmington is a big area. There's one here, like Norman, Denver area.
Yeah.
But the research was big for me. So I started with those two entities and then literally getting my hands on anything. I think, is it tinyhouse.com? One of those, it's two brothers, I think, and they do like a lot of virtual webinars.
Yep.
So I started attending those and just kind of threw myself in there. And then locally, of course, a chamber, but I was a part of this co-working space, I said, it's called Flywheel. So even the chamber is centered there. It's called the Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. So it's amazing. Small business center is there, the chamber, economic development. So literally everybody's a small business owner that you want to know is in this environment. And so being there, I was actually a candidate to be in the venture mentoring program, which is an MIT program. That's how I got hooked up with the mayor. So I was able to pitch. And then these city community members who are business owners were able to kind of like bid on you to say, I want to work with this business. And so I have the mayor of Concord. I have a younger Black lady who owns two yoga studios, who's also an accountant. And then a gentleman who does hospital housing. And he's also a co-partner in one of the big breweries here. So I've had that team with me this whole time. And because of that, I think that's why everything's been able to catapult so quickly. So just me getting plugged in, not only from the industry side, but locally as well.
Got it. Well, I want to make sure that people who are listening, especially if you are in the North Carolina area or surrounding the Charlotte area, that you know where to find out more. So can you say, you know, when and where the festival is and where people can go to find out more?
Absolutely. So as far as our social, we have two different areas. So tinyhousebigmovement.org is our organization site.
Okay.
Kind of everything is housed there. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn is all Tiny House Big Movement handles.
Okay.
And then for the show, it's tinyhomefest.org. And the show is the Carolina Tiny House Festival. You can find it on Eventbrite and Facebook. There's a event page for it there, basically the 12th through the 14th. And again, we're looking for dwellers, we're looking for builders, volunteers, all the things. And the applications are on the website, so you can fill out whatever. And we do have a special going on right now for builders and dwellers as well. So, as a dweller, if you want to stay at the Speedway, which I think is super cool, we do have a small charge for that, but that's an option to do that.
Nice. Yeah. And as an attendee of many a tiny house fest, I will say that it's basically the most fun hanging out after at the festival with all the tiny house dwellers, because they're the coolest people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So yeah. And everything, lodging is even on the site. There is an RV resort that's connected to the speedway. That's literally block up the street. So if you want to rent an RV, or if you have a schoolie or a tiny that you want to bring, you can park there as well. And it's super cheap. So all that is on the tiny house, the festival website.
Awesome. Well, Kim Delaney, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. This was great.
Yes, I appreciate it, Ethan. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Kim Delaney for being a guest on the show today. You can find the show notes, including links to the Carolina Tiny House Festival and Tiny House Big Movement, over at thetinyhouse.net/289. You will also find a complete written transcript of today's episode there, in case that is something that you would like to refer back to. Well, that's all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.